your presentations here was asking the right questions, the most important job you'll have. What can you give us a quick summary on what that was all about?
Sure. The genesis of actually that talk came from discussions that I had with people at some previous CUES conferences. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was, well, Mike, you're suggesting that we as board members have a really important constructive partnership with management, mm-hmm. and that one of the things that we should be doing and doing on a regular basis is asking really good, high quality questions that are fiduciary in nature, the fiduciary oversight type mm-hmm, questions, mm-hmm. but also strategic questions, as well as what's commonly termed today generative questions, kind of questions that really look at fundamental issues, fundamental values, even fundamental assumptions mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that may be conscious, that may even be unconscious in their nature. And so how is it that we can begin to recognize the kinds of questions that we should ask, and how can we ask better questions? Yeah. And so it's easier asked than answered.
Of course. Isn't that usually how it is?
Right.
That's why I interview and people answer. I ask the questions.
There we go.
I love it.
And what I said to them is, I said, this particular seminar is not going to be about what you should do so much as how you might begin to think about and approach your efforts as a board member or as a senior leader of mm-hmm. your credit union. And we began to talk about a number of important studies that have been done in the past about how people think. One of the classic ones is, and the man just won a Nobel Prize for it, was Daniel Kahneman, and he wrote a wonderful book called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. Mm-hmm. And he uses this wonderful analogy of the iceberg, and that is our conscious minds, what we're thinking about on a regular basis, the way we think, mm-hmm. is that 10% mm-hmm. above the waterline. But his argument is that 90% of our thoughts, of what's really going on in our brains, is at an unconscious level below the waterline. And the reason he won the Nobel Prize is that he was really able to show how the stuff happening below the waterline, mm-hmm. the 90% unconscious stuff, yeah. has a deep, profound impact on the conscious stuff.
Okay.
And so he made this connection and made a really good case for that connection, even though that's not our common experience. We think we're rational, objective, analytical human beings in business or in the credit union boardroom or the like. Mm-hmm. He showed pretty profoundly that how we feel, how we believe, what the fundamental kind of assumptions in our experience of reality is, has this huge dynamic impact on the way we're rational, the way we think about things, mm-hmm. the way we even think about what we're supposed to be objective about. And so we often in our lives develop a kind of bubble of beliefs. And what we did in our seminar is we looked at some of those bubbles of beliefs, mm-hmm. the way we think about being on a credit union, what a credit union is about, or being a credit union board member. And we began to kind of pull them apart a little bit and to analyze how they might be based on assumptions right. that are either true right. or mythical.
Okay.
And there was some tough love in the room, but I think people really enjoyed it. And really, it's all about how can we think more effectively.
Okay.
The
okay.
only way we're going to think more effectively is to kind of look at, as David Gray, Peter Senge, and others, Chris Egress, have talked about, and this is kind of this ladders of inference of mm-hmm. how we view reality, what we pay attention to as a result of reality, you know, what our sensations are, mm-hmm. what we sense, and then we filter that rather considerably. We can only pay attention and focus to so much at one time. So we did a great selective attention exercise where I showed them a little bit of a movie clip. And I said, okay, what did you see change in the movie?
What did you see change, right? Yeah.
And, you know, most people didn't see any change. A couple people saw one or two changes,
yeah.
and there were two or three people that saw three or more changes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There were 21 changes that took place within the scene.
My goodness.
So the vast majority of things that changed right before everyone's eyes, no one ever saw them.
Mm.
But of course, if I had asked them to focus on any one of those things, they would have definitely seen the change.
Sure.
That's my experience.
Sure.
And so our board meetings, our credit union board meetings, are all about that. They are really the suggestion by management. They're the suggestion by our fellow board members and the like. These are the things we should focus in. This is what we should pay attention to. And some of them are very important, and we should focus on them. The problem is what we don't focus on, we don't see.
Okay. All right.
So if it's almost exclusively fiduciary oversight, mm-hmm. we're not going to see the strategic implications. We're not going to see the strategic questions. Indeed, Many of our meetings are built in the credit union field for kind of data exchange or download, and not really to explore more deeply the kinds of questions that we should be exploring of a strategic or even beyond nature, you know, the ultimate vision of the credit union. So it can be difficult to build that into agendas. So we ended on the notion of how you can begin to adjust your agendas to actually build in time to have the right questions, the great questions asked, that will lead you to a more productive set of decisions, more strategic decisions, and ultimately, hopefully, help the credit union flourish.
Yeah, you kind of answered my second question for me, is because I was going to ask you, how does somebody in your session apply this at their credit union? How do you connect the dots from your session to their board directors meeting?
Yeah, the connecting the dots is a little bit more difficult, only because this particular topic is let's just say it's a little bit more academic in nature, because it's thinking about how we think, which is hard to do. But the way they would actually begin to apply it, nuts and bolts, pragmatically, is what do we focus in on our board meetings? What's important that we pay attention to? What's in our board meeting materials? What should be in there? What really doesn't need to be in there? What are the kinds of things that we are
How do you filter that stuff out?
Well, I think...
Yeah, we're over here. We're over here. That's okay. We're fine. That's why I have this.
Awesome. So ask me the question again. How do we filter it?
How do you filter that information? How do you decide what's a good question or what's a good thing and what's a bad thing to have in the meeting as far as, and to filter that out? Here's the necessary stuff and the unnecessary stuff.
Yeah. So on a couple of different levels. So on one level is I've asked people about their typical board packets. It's like, you know, what's in your board packets and how much detail is there? How much information is there? And some people say, you know, it's 70 pages, it's 30 pages, it's 100 pages. Some people say it's 320 to 350 pages per month. And that's an enormous amount of information for a board member or anyone to absorb, right? And so we begin then helping them look at that. Now, what's this information in there for, and what's it doing for you? And is there another way of actually displaying the information, let's say, other than a full-blown report? Or is there another way of displaying the information in a dashboard format or the like that makes it more efficient? It doesn't change the fundamental information. And by the way, do you need to be looking at that information every single board meeting? Everyone assumes, by the way, you have 12 board meetings, all 12 should be identical. Well, how about having 4 meetings a year of your 12 meetings that are more strategic in nature, and therefore you could have different types of information, different types of agenda items that would be more interesting as far as an engaging discussion about strategy, an engaging discussion about learning. And so you begin to then look at the different meetings and have different mixes of information. So you look at the whole year and say, we need to have all of these different types of information presented throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Not every meeting has to be identical.
Right.
And therefore you can begin to look at what Ramcharan has called the information architecture surrounding a board and begin to make some judgments as to how much is too little, and how much is too much, and what is just about right. What's the right amount, right?
That's the Goldilocks syndrome.
Right. So it's the Goldilocks syndrome, or let's just call it the Aristotelian mean. We'll call it the Aristotelian mean. That sounds more impressive,
yes,
right?
Yes, it does.
Right.
Very grand.
The answer is there's a balancing point. Why is this so important? Well, too little information is extremely unwise, right? Then the board isn't able to carry out its fiduciary duty, and it doesn't know enough about what's going on. But too much information is equally bad. Because what happens? Well, people can't read all that information. But really what's happening there is, if everything is important, nothing is important.
Exactly.
And therefore, the important information, it's not maliciously hidden. It's there. Mm-hmm. Think about the default of staff, right? Mm-hmm. The default is like, hey, we never want to be in a case of withholding information from the board, so let's put it all in there. But if you put it all in there and there's too much to absorb, it's as though you didn't really give it to them at all. In some ways, lawyers will say this, you know, they'll do discovery in a case, a litigation case, and it's like, oh, well, if we really want to hide the information, what do? You just pull up an 18-wheeler truck and unload 250 banker's boxes of information and say, we've given you all the information you asked for, right?
Good luck.
good luck finding it, right? Yeah. It shouldn't be that hard to find the really critical information. So a big believer in actually even not only kind of sifting through what the typical information architecture and materials for a board meeting are like, but actually looking at the dashboards and the ways we present that information visually so that it can be quickly visually as well as intellectually kind of understood. And there are some great tools out there to do that with, and it makes the meeting more effective, more efficient, and leaves you time to have the kind of in-depth strategic discussions that you need to be having on a regular basis as well.
It sounds like it's a time question. It's a matter of time to find out, to avoid the too much and to avoid the too little, so you can find that happy medium in there.
Yeah, I mean, I can easily ask folks, it's like, well, you're supposed to be doing your fiduciary oversight right. On the credit union, right? Well, would it be the case if you did it, if your board meeting were 10 hours long and you did 10 hours of fiduciary oversight every single board meeting every single month? And most people will say, well, that's too much, right? And I say, okay, 10-minute meeting every single month, is that too little? Oh yeah, that's too little. Okay, so between 10 hours and 10 minutes, where are we going to find the right balance that incorporates sufficient fiduciary oversight to satisfy yourselves, to satisfy your members, to satisfy the regulators, all of that?
Yeah.
But also to leave enough time to have the forward-looking discussions, because often fiduciary oversight is about what happened in the past. So how do you have enough time to have the forward-looking discussions to really have an impact on the strategic vision and direction of the credit union, and have that conversation and constructive partnership with senior staff? Otherwise, what happens is that the board becomes kind of like a high-level management and financial auditor, and all of the real strategic stuff is simply defaulted to staff. And that's not right either.
Yeah.
The board needs to play a meaningful role in steering and directing the credit union in constructive partnership with staff. So the board meetings have to be constructed, and you have to be asking the right types of questions that focus in, again, not on just fiduciary oversight, but also on strategy. And a lot of our clients have been able to make that balance and make that adjustment. It takes some time, but it can definitely be done.
Is there a template or something like that people can, or is it just, is it everything's individual? Everything is, every credit union is different because of their membership and all that type of stuff.
If you've met one credit union board, you've met one credit union board. They are all a little bit different in meaningful ways. The history of the credit union, the membership they have, their geographic profile, their leadership style, and indeed where they want to go. But are there some templates? Are there some guiding
samples? That's what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. We have them on our website.
Oh,
we do them
perfect.
In our retreats. We do them all the time. And that is we can guide people by looking at the materials they're using, what the typical board materials look like, what their board manual is like, and what it says the roles and responsibilities of the board members are and are not. And you can come to a better balance.
Okay. That segues into my wrap-up question. I'm going to give your firm a plug here. What are you guys all about? That type of stuff. I'm thinking you alluded a lot to it, but if you want to give a little wrap-up.
Sure. Well, quantum governance is a L3C. Interestingly enough, a lot of people think that quantum governance is a for-profit consulting firm because consultants are for-profit.
Sure.
But we're not. We're actually a limited liability, low-profit organization dedicated to the public good.
Wow.
And it's a new legal
form that
exists. Okay. It's a new legal form that exists in the United States of America, and we, like credit unions, are actually very focused on those we serve. Now, credit unions are focused on their members and the communities that they're a part of. We're focused on our clients. And at the end of the year, we're not trying to make a profit. We just want to pay everyone's salary and break even. And if we do that, we're good. But we do focus a great deal on the governance, the leadership of credit unions, and the strategy of credit unions. And so we're partners with CUES to do all of their survey work. Mm-hmm. We also do a lot of assessment work in general in the credit union community, research and the like. And we also facilitate a lot of retreats, governance retreats, strategy retreats for credit unions and help them think on a deeper level, on a more profound level, in a more effective way. And that's where strategy and governance actually kind of begin to kind of merge together a little bit. Strategy we don't look at as a completely separate component of who we are as a firm and what we do. Strategy is really a component of the board's work and the senior leadership team's work at the governance level in the credit union.
Gotcha.
And so we combine often governance and strategy together and help them with a twofer to do both. And so they really usually enjoy that. And a lot of our clients have come back year after year and said that it's really made a, you know, transformational difference over time for how they deliberate, how they think of their roles and responsibilities as board members, and how they interact with each other and with management in the creation, the co-creation of their strategic vision going forward. So when we hear that, you know, that's the work that we're here to do. We also just do general facilitation for groups on various different topics. And one of the interesting things we just did is we did a research study with Q's, with Filene, with the Clarkson Center up Rotman School in Toronto, and with DDJ Myers on first of its kind study on paying credit union board members. So one of the things we do is research, and we really
look
at
topic.
It's a very hot topic right now. Indeed, now upwards of 18 states for state credit unions have passed various different forms of legislation allowing payments to individuals that serve on state chartered credit unions. And, you know, what are the pros? What are the cons? Is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? Mm-hmm. And what is the impact of that is the thing that really now needs to be studied in the future.
Exactly.
But we did some of the initial research along with our colleagues at Filene and all of that on that, at least by being a catalyst and sponsoring that research.
Right,
and
right.
We were deeply involved in the kind of questions and what that was all about. And so I will tell you, this is going to continue to be a very, very passionate discussion within the credit union field in the years to come.
No doubt.
It will end up, I don't know. And we did the paper not to take an advocacy position, payment or not payment, but just to understand.
To find out.
Yeah, understand why is it that people want to be paid? What is it people are paying?
Mm-hmm.
What are the implications of paying a credit union board member? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Are there unintended consequences when you do it? So that's the kinds of things we looked at. And there's more work that needs to be done, of course.
As the credit union world turns,
that's
you're
it.
Right there in the mix. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael
Pleasure.
Damio, everybody. Well done, sir.